Welcome to this special supplemental episode for the Fandom Podcast Network Masterfeed. I am Brandon Shea Metella, one of the hosts of the Alfred Hitchcock Podcast, Good Evening. And just this past weekend, we had the Fan Expo here in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and I was able to get a few little interviews for you guys. So in this special supplemental episode, you're going to hear three of them. We've got an interview with director Lowell Dean and star Leo Fafard of the 2014 independent film Wolf Cop. We've got an interview for you with Bruce Boxleitner, who was, I think a few of you guys have heard of him before. He was a star of Babylon 5, he's been a star of Tron, and we've also got for you an interview with Tom Grummett, who's a comic book creator. He's a sketch artist for many comics, many DC comics, including Superman. So I hope you enjoy this little special supplemental episode that we've thrown up for you. Oh, that didn't sound fun at all. That we've tossed up, that we've placed in the master feed for the Fandom Podcast Network.
The Babylon Project was our last, best hope for peace. A self-contained world 5 miles long, located in neutral territory. A place of commerce and diplomacy for 250,000 humans and aliens. A shining beacon in space, all alone in the night. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, the year the Great War came upon us all. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2259. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
So we're here at the Regina Fan Expo with Bruce Boxleitner. How's it going, Bruce?
Good.
Excellent.
Very good.
I really appreciate taking a few minutes here to answer a few questions for me. I was wondering if you could tell me, what's the primary difference in working in television versus working in film?
Time.
Time?
It's just the time it takes to make. Though television is changing a great deal now, and you know they're doing like feature quality stuff on television now. So it takes a lot longer. Like Game of Thrones, they're taking, you know, it's like $10 million an episode. That's also time and money. Used to be, and you look at these pictures here, I was from another era when I was doing television series. Even Babylon 5, we were so cheaply made. But we were doing an episode in 7 days. Feature film, you're doing 7 months. You know, it takes much longer to do. They take a slower pace. You've got a television, you've got airtime already for that episode you're shooting. So you have to have it done. It has to go through the post-production process. And so it takes, you know, a couple of weeks. I just did an NCIS episode, and it was on 2 weeks later, less than 2 weeks later. So that's how fast the turnaround is for episodic television. And that's what I'm actually more used to. It chafes me when I have to sit around too long waiting to do an eighth of a page for 2 days. An eighth of a page. That's what, if I hear a feature film actor complain about what an arduous shoot it was to do one scene for 3 or 4 days, I want to go, what? I did 10 scenes in less time in one day. You know what I mean? So those are some of the differences. It's just time and the cost.
When you were on Babylon 5, were you aware of the arc that the creators had intended for the show?
Yeah, I just chose to ignore it because my character didn't see it coming. So I didn't want to see it coming. I wanted to be surprised as the actor surprised and as the character, okay, what do I do now? You know, because he always had some dilemma coming his way. And that's truer to the character. I just didn't want to. I was too in the moment of doing what we were doing, but I was aware that he had this thing out. We didn't get privy to everything. Mm-hmm. We didn't get too far ahead. Probably the week ahead would be about it. I forget what day of the week a new script would come out, at least the first draft. Then it would go through changes anyway by the time we shot. So, but it felt right there. And that's to answer like your other question, that sense of immediacy I liked. You know?
How surprising was it to find out that they were planning a Tron sequel so far after the original?
Well, I didn't really know it. I only knew it probably a couple... I was hired in November. We shot in April. I was hired to do the screen testing with all the young actors and actresses that were going to play Cora and Sam. And I did this scene here with a whole bunch of different young actors, four young stars. Even Casey Affleck wanted to, but they deemed he was too old to be Jeff's son. He could be Jeff's son, but he wanted to play. Garrett Hedlund worked out just great. He had the physicality. He looked like one of the Bridges boys, you know. He looked very conceivable to be. He was my personal pick of all of them. And like I said, there were a number of guys that you've seen in movies right now that were up for it. And also Olivia Wilde. I just knew she was, strangely enough, in fact, that I did. There was nothing written when we were doing the... And you're plenty fine. There's nobody here. When we were doing the screen test for the Quora character, I actually did a long scene from Blade Runner. They didn't have anything quite finished yet for Quora, because she doesn't talk a lot in it. And they actually had a scene where she didn't say anything. It had to be the reaction shot, what they wanted. But Sean Young was told by Harrison Ford, those aren't her memories. Those are memories of, you know, that she's a replicant. The look on her face, that's what they wanted, this vulnerability look. So I don't think many people know that. And then we finally did have a scene later on. She came back when it kind of narrowed down to her, that she and Sam, she and Garrett did the one scene where they're on the solar sailor. Jeff has gone up to the head to meditate. He said he was going to go knock on the universe or something like that. One of his hipster saying. And then they did their scene, and I just knew those were the two that they were going to get.
Now, you did voice work as well for the Tron animated series.
Yes, I did. I did Tron as well on the Tron Uprising.
Oh, Tron Uprising.
Which I wished would have gone further.
Yes.
All things Tron seem to get truncated very quickly.
What's different about doing voice work versus film work or TV work?
Script. You know, there's nothing other than you're in a booth and you're reading on a microphone. But probably Elijah Wood and myself did. We had to do a couple scenes for all the head honchos at Disney. All came into the sound room, sat down. So it was a little nerve-wracking. They wanted to see how we sounded off each other. They knew me, but they didn't know how Elijah Wood, who's got a little higher pitched voice, was going to come across, but it worked. They apparently liked it, and the rest is history.
Excellent. So what's been your favorite genre that you've worked in? Because you've done just about everything over your career.
I don't know, to me everything is a cowboy movie. Yeah. I mean, it just has different wardrobes, you know? But the same kind of stories. I've tended to be in more like epic or heroic stories. Which Tron certainly is. Babylon 5 certainly is. Science fiction, strangely enough, the Western genre and the science fiction genre. You can comment on the times you're living in without hitting the audience over the head with. You can talk about themes, you know, that are universal themes. Through those two genres very well, you know. I think I did get to capture that in how the West was won to Babylon 5. You know. Tron, I think, is the science fiction we're living. So that's why I think, strangely enough, it is, it's still alive. 1982, it came out, nobody knew what it was. Kind of didn't have a big beginning, but somehow we're still talking about it.
Yeah.
These many years later. Whereas no one's seen the sequel to E.T., which came out the same summer. So,
are there any projects you're working on right now you can tell us about?
Nope, nothing right now. I just did NCIS. I was on, like I told you, a couple weeks ago. Mainly doing conventions. This is my time to do conventions. You know? And then you watch, I'll have something scheduled, and then the way jobs come is, you know, I never see them coming too much. So.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking a few minutes. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Regina Fan Expo, and we're talking to comic book artists. Is that how you'd like to be best described?
Yeah.
Excellent. Right on. And this is Tom Grummett, and he's done a lot of work for DC and Marvel, and lots of different superheroes. So, Tom, why don't you tell us, when did you discover a passion for artistry and for drawing?
When I was about 4, 5, or 6, reading the newspaper strips in the newspaper, the Sundays, that were all colorful. And then I discovered comic books before I could even read them. And I just was fascinated by the world around it, within the panels I was looking at, you know. It was like stepping into a whole new world. And I realized that there were people who actually drew these. So I tried to copy what I saw. And I basically never stopped.
So what were those comic books that inspired you?
Oh, I read Superman, I read Batman, I read Archie, I read Little Lulu. I read anything that was basically a comic book. I read Westerns, horror comics, humor comics, just anything. Comics. Yep.
So you started to work in the industry in 1988. What was the first issue that you worked on?
The first thing I did was a Secret Origins story that involved Animal Man, who I'd never heard. Well, I'd probably heard of him, but didn't really remember him. An obscure DC character. And from there, I did a lot of fill-in work on titles like Animal Man and Wonder Woman, and did a fill-in on Action Comics. And a number of other projects. And then I was offered to be the regular penciler on the New Titans, which introduced me to, you know, drawing Starfire and Cyborg and Nightwing, Raven, those characters. And then from there, I moved on to Superman and worked on the Superman titles for 10 years.
Out of all the works that you've done, what do you say would be the issue that you're most proud of?
The issue I'm most proud of, I would think probably for longevity's sake, and I think the Death of Superman storyline, all that stuff. I took a read through it recently, and it still stands up today, I think. And it was a huge story that I'm pretty proud of. Because to me, it was the Superman story that taught me how much Superman meant to the world, not just to comics fans, but to everyone. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Now, what's the process? So you're given a story. How much direction are you given for the panels that you're supposed to draw, or is it left entirely up to you?
It depends. When I started, I was working almost completely with plots, which is a page-by-page breakdown of the story. And that gave me the freedom to determine, okay, there's going to be so many panels on the page, and this is how I'll arrange them and that sort of stuff. Lately, I've been working more and more with full scripts, where it's the writer who's determining how many panels are on the page. And hopefully, in the course of working on these things, he and I agree on how the page is going to look. But I have some latitude and enough experience now that I can, if I think something needs to be changed, I can bring it up and generally make a pretty good case for it. And then I just start penciling. And from there, it goes over to an inker and a letterer. And it's overseen the whole way by an editor. And then it comes out on the stand.
So when you're drawing a page, so sometimes in comic books, one page can be one panel, and sometimes you can maybe get 9 panels on a page. Do you draw everything on the same size of page? Or if you're drawing a page that has 9 panels, do you make it as 9 panels? Or do you make 9 full-size images and then they maybe shrink them down?
No. The pages pretty much look like that there, which I'm sure you can see on radio. I work on sheets 11 by 17 in size. Border rule, I don't even measure anymore. I just print them off on my computer. But I work a singular size and lay out all the panels on that page.
Now, you've got a Kickstarter going on right now. Why don't you tell us about that?
Back in 2000, Carl Kiesel and I, who had at the time been collaborating on Superboy, launched a creator-owned project called Section Zero, that sadly only lasted about 3 issues before personal issues kind of got in the way of us completing it. And our plan was to do about 6 or 8 issues back then. So it's been sitting on the shelf for 17 years, more or less. And we recently launched a Kickstarter to complete the story. Our plan is to gather up the first 3 issues with new material, plus complete the story we began. And so far, we've gotten really good response for it. So we're quite gratified and surprised and humbled and touched that a number of people seem to want to see us finish this thing off finally. So if you're interested, go check it out. You can Google Section Zero Kickstarter and it'll take you right to our campaign. And you can see all the cool stuff we're offering as rewards if you decide to back us. And if you decide not to back us, just spread the word on social media that we're out there. Okay?
And is there anywhere people can follow you on social media? Are you on a Twitter account or anything like that?
I just started up an Instagram account that I'm starting to figure out how to use. So you can find me there under Tom Grubbick. And that's pretty much it so far.
Excellent. Well, I thank you very much for taking a few minutes to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Excellent.
Nice talking.
God. sure?
Is it almost time?
It's like a face. It kind of looks like you.
Ooh, better stop over at the brewery. Do some investigating.
Did you think of myself when I'm a wolf?
You did seem like freakishly strong. You had those claws and those teeth. Plus, you know, you were drunk, so I knew it was you.
Hello? Hello?
My, what big teeth you have. That's not all.
Tell him what you told me.
He was a big wolf cop.
Lou, you're a wolf cop.
We're here in the Regina Fan Expo, and I'm sitting down with the director and creator of Wolf Cop, Lowell Dean. How's it going, Lowell?
Great. How you doing?
Excellent. And the star.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I got to get your name. I haven't seen Wolf Cop yet.
Leo Fafard.
Leo Fafard. And when I saw the trailer, it was Lou Guru was your name. Is it still Lou Guru in the movies?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Right on. So, Lowell, Wolf Cop came about in a very different manner than a lot of films. It started with a trailer. Why don't you tell us a little bit about making the trailer for the film?
Sure. We knew that it was such a weird idea that it was going to be hard to get conventional funding. So, and I had a very distinct vision for what I wanted it to be in terms of the tone of horror and comedy. And when you say Wolf Cop, it could go a lot of ways. It could be like the worst movie ever. It could be the silliest movie ever. It could be a movie that's very serious when it shouldn't be. So we made the concept trailer basically to cut out 50 questions and just say, instead of trying to pitch the movie, here it is. Watch these 2 minutes. It's no homework. You don't have to read 50 things. This is the movie in 2 minutes. And it really worked out. We entered something called the Cineku competition, where they want to actually see trailers before they pick which kind of movie they want to make. And we, by fluke, already had our trailer. So I think it really helped us rise to the top.
Excellent. Right on. So what's the makeup experience like for you? Because you've got a pretty elaborate costume that you wear in the film.
It's extensive. It's a lot of just sitting in a chair and having terrible smelling chemicals put on your face and whatnot. But we've got the process down well enough now, and Emerson is such a skilled artist that I pretty much sleep through it now. Like it takes about an hour 45, and I'm probably asleep for an hour and a half of that.
That's not bad for how much makeup you got to get put on to get it down to an hour and 45 minutes. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's he's a real artist. He's got her figured out.
So now we've got two Wolf Cop films that have been made.
Yeah.
And it looks like you're planning on a series. What would the series be about?
Well, we don't know if we're going to do a series. We're kind of just putting it out there into the universe that we'd love to do a series. But we also kind of consider the franchise of films a series, because it's weird to say franchise when you're two indie werewolf Canadian Saskatchewan movies. But the series, if we got to do it, I know what I'd want to do. It's too early to see if that'll happen, though. Yeah.
Now, have you been surprised with the success of Wolf Cop? Because I remember seeing on Facebook once, you posted that even before the first movie came out, somebody created a toy in Africa or something like this. Can you remind me of this?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many weird things. Before we were even selected by Cineku, just putting the trailer out there, we were doing interviews with like major sites like Fangoria and Ain't It Cool, and IO9 was covering our concept trailer, and people in South Africa were doing fan art. People had made their own like Lego figurine versions of Wolf Cop. So it was a weird amount of pressure and hype for something that was, at that stage, just an idea.
Right on. So out of the whole thing, what do you think the inspiration was? What's your inspiration for your acting style for the film?
Geez, that's a good question. It's pretty... it's pretty uninspiring. My inspiration is uninspiring. I pretty much just go to a recessed, subhuman, base instinct kind of place, and I act like a complete animal. It's there's not too much complicated about it. Once you got the makeup on, there's it just sort of seeps into you. You get into character, and sky's the limit. You can do anything you want. You can take it any place you want, more or less. And it's really, I just act like a complete and utter animal.
And what's your inspiration for writing the film, Paul?
My inspiration and my pitch was always Teen Wolf meets Bad Lieutenant.
Excellent. A couple of classic films.
Yeah.
So, now, film school.
Yes.
You went to film school.
Yes.
How much did it prepare you to actually become a director?
Oh, God, that's a loaded question. I don't think film school necessarily does prepare you to be a director. I think making films, it's just in you or it's not. I was already well on my path by the time I went to university. I was the kind of person who just made a short film every weekend with my friends, no matter what. So the best thing film school did is it put me in a room with people who were also crazy and obsessed. Not all of them were, and it was kind of an interesting thing to weed out those people, you know? So I almost would compare it to, like, Survivor. You're suddenly in a room with 15 people. You immediately feel nothing for five of them. Five of them, you're like, these people are amazing. And five you're indifferent about, and you gravitate towards the people who bust their ass and want to make stuff, and those are still people I work with to this day. So the best, I mean, you're going to get the theory, you're going to get the practical on-set making things, you're going to learn hard lessons on your short films and in production. And so I think film school has a place, but it doesn't even come close to making things.
Now, has Wolf Cop opened any doors for you guys, whether it's acting or any more filmmaking?
Yeah, I mean, I have gotten a couple of minor parts where I think perhaps Wolf Cop, the success of Wolf Cop has opened the door for me. I mean, I don't have talent agents or producers crawling all over themselves to get to me or anything like that, but I think it definitely has helped my career.
I think it has, for sure. I mean, even when people don't understand Wolf Cop, I think they understand that we made a movie and people saw it, and there are some people out there in the world who are drawing pictures and getting tattoos of it. So I think even if you don't understand Wolf Cop, that at least says, hey, maybe these people did something someone out there likes.
Yeah. So where can people find information on Wolf Cop?
We're all over social media. That's kind of been one of our obsessions, so you don't have to look too far on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Type in Wolf Cop, you're going to find us, and we're posting all the time with updates about the sequel and just engaging with people who want to say, I loved it, I hated it, I'm confused.
Yeah. And what other projects are you guys working on right now that you can tell us about?
We're working on another indie feature called Supergrid, which is a Saskatchewan-made feature developed primarily by producer Hugh Patterson, who is one of the Wolf Cop people. He got Telefilm financing, and he went through the NSI program with it. And so Leo, myself, and a bunch of other of the team from Wolf Cop are going to be on board on that. And on the side, we're also myself and Emerson Ziffel, the effects artist from Wolf Cop, and Joel Hustak, an artist, are working on a comic book called Atomic Victory Squad. So hopefully we'll be crowdfunding that in the next 3 or 4 months.
Excellent. Right on. And you guys on Twitter that people could follow you if they want to check you out?
You bet. I'm on Twitter. My handle is LoloFilm.
LoloFilm?
I am not.
Not on Twitter?
Anywhere to be found.
You're on Instagram.
Oh, I'm on Instagram. I don't remember my name, though. So, probably don't waste your time looking for me.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for taking a few minutes to speak with me. I really appreciate it. And good luck on your future endeavors. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
thank
Brandon.
You. Thank you very much. Nice talking to you.